Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Relativism, the idea that there are no fixed truths and certainly no fixed moral truths, is fast becoming the dominant philosophy of our age. In fact, before becoming Pope Benedict, Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger warned about the spreading dictatorship of relativism. Welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. And are there ways to respond to relativism with logic and love? Our guest today says there are. Theologian Dr. Edward Sree is a founding leader with Curtis Martin of the Fellowship of Catholic University Students, and he serves as a professor of theology and vice president of mission and outreach at the Augustine Institute in Denver, Colorado. His latest book, Who Am I to Judge? Responding to Relativism with Logic and Love, sets out seven keys for responding to relativism. And if you have a question for Dr. Sree on how to challenge relativism, or how to think clearly about moral issues in general, please give us a call, 888-318-7884. We welcome your call, 888-318-7884. Dr. Edward Sree, thank you so much for being with us today on Catholic Answers Live.
Great to be with you again.
So the dictatorship of relativism, what did Cardinal Ratzinger mean by that? Do you have an idea?
Oh, yeah. He'd been writing about this in many different places, even leading up to that famous statement right before he went in to the conclave. Basically, the idea that if anyone dares to stand up for moral truth, if you dare to say, I think abortion's wrong, or I think marriage is between a man and a woman, you're going to get a slap on the hand. You know, yeah. You're going to say, don't be so judgmental. Don't be so intolerant. And so he was concerned that we were, you know, have a new kind of dictatorship out there that marginalizes any kind of Christian conviction. And he's encouraging Christians to stand up for moral truth.
And but now what about the person who will say, but no human can have an absolute knowledge of the truth, so we have to be relativists because of the limits of our knowledge about what is moral and what's not?
Yeah, God gave us a mind. I would just come right back and say, and he wants us to use it. We can actually apply our mind and come to know many things. We can know 2 + 2 = 4. We can know how to build buildings and bridges. We can, you know, make predictions about the weather. We use our mind for things all the time. But we can even use our mind to just using reason to discern what is moral truth. We can discern things like killing an innocent person is just wrong. We can discern that things like you know, rape is wrong and stealing is wrong. Those are things that people who didn't even have a Christian tradition, they came to realize this. People like Aristotle and Plato, long before the revelation of Christ came, they can realize many things about the virtuous life, what leads to a happy life, what is right and what is wrong. Our minds are capable of doing that.
So then relativism is kind of a rejection of reason itself, or a rejection of our ability to reason.
I think it is that. I also think it's actually the product of a culture that is losing its ability to reason well, a culture that's based more on emotions and feelings and how we make our life decisions. And so for them, that's why it's hard for some people, because they have, you know, they're not bad feelings. They don't want to offend people, or, you know, they want to get along with society. And I get that, you know, that there's nothing wrong with those intentions. But we can't live our lives based on our emotions and our fears of what other people may think of us. We need to be able to rise at many times above our emotions and live according to what our reason would tell us is the right way to live. So if I discern, for example, you know, that my child shouldn't be eating too many sweets. All right. So I got this little girl who just had a birthday. She had a nice big cake yesterday. And if she wanted to keep eating cake all day long, which she does, and my emotions are saying, oh, but I don't want to offend her. I don't want to get her upset. And I could let her eat the cake, but I'm not doing a loving thing. I'm actually doing something that's going to make her sick. It's not good for her. Real love is to seek what's best for another person. And we as human persons are made to love, and our culture needs to love better. Relativism actually is what's dividing us and preventing us from loving people, because it says, don't tell other people what's right or wrong. Whereas, you know, if I see a friend that, you know, is, let's say they're doing something wrong. You know, they'd be working on a project at work and they're doing it the wrong way. Am I a mean, judgmental person if I go and say, hey, actually, here's a better way to do it. You'll get it done faster. Your boss will be happier. That's a loving thing to do, to sit back and say, well, I don't want to impose my views on my coworker. I'm going to let them figure it out on their own. That's just not loving. If I see my little daughter ready to run into a busy street, it's not loving for me to sit back and say, oh, I don't want to offend her. I'm not going to say anything. We need to love people better in our culture to help pass on what's right or wrong.
So in the book, Who Am I to Judge? Responding to Relativism and with Logic and Love. In part three of the book, you lay down seven keys for responding to relativism. And let me give out the number again, 888-318-7884 if you want to talk with Dr. Sri about relativism or about the moral life in general, 888-318-7884. Can we go through the seven?
That'd be great. Yeah.
Okay. Because you say lead with mercy. How is that helping us get clearer thinking on moral issues?
Yeah. Let me back up and just say just these seven keys that we offer in the book. They're not like a three-step argument. You know, these are like little things you use in an elevator speech to convince your friend. Because I'm convinced, actually, that relativism is too hard. It's too complicated. It's so emotional for people. We've got to do more than just give a nice little three-point argument. So these seven keys relate to overall attitudes, approaches. They're like keys you have in your pocket. You bring it out with your friend, your relative, your family member when it's needed. And so the first one, though, is all-encompassing. So lead with mercy. What I mean by that is in our world today, we have many people who've made a lot of mistakes with their lives. We have a lot of people that are living in certain patterns. They've got a lot of bad habits. Some of them have a lot of addictions. And if we just come to them with the moral law and say, you got to just change and get your life together and just live this moral law, we might actually do more harm than good if that's all we do. Now, I want to be clear, we always have to give truth. You know, we can never run away from the truth. But we have to give the full truth, which is more than just the moral truth. It's the truth of God's mercy, his love, his redemption. And so, for example, you know, St. Bernard of Clairvaux once said that why do people sometimes not convert? And he said many times it's because they don't think they have it in them to do it. They don't think they can change. They're so weighed down by their habits and their sins. I can't live like those Christians, so I'm not even going to bother. And our role as apologists and evangelists, you know, and what we want to do is remove whatever obstacles are in the way of that person saying yes to Christ more in their life. And sometimes the obstacle isn't just, you know, the moral truth. It's sometimes just a fear. I can't change. I can't do this. And so we want to give them hope in that, you know what? There's other people who've struggled like you have. Like St. Augustine. You know, he struggled with chastity, you know, and fell so many times. And yet one day God gave him the grace to help him. And God can do the same thing for you. I often use the example of, you know, in our culture that's so plagued by pornography. If all we did was just go to young men and just say, hey, get your act together. This is mortal sin. Stop looking at those dirty pictures. All I said was true, but I didn't give them the full truth of hope, you know, there's grace here. You know, God knows what you've done. He can forgive you. No matter how many times you fall, just go back to confession. And there's grace, and he can change you and give them hope. And I know I have friends who've been right where you are, and over the course of counseling or whatever, you know, they were able to change, and they've got great marriages now. Let's give them that hope and that mercy to know that they can be forgiven, to know that they can be healed. If we don't give them that, we just give them this high moral bar. Many of them are going to look at that and go, I just can't live up to that. I just can't do that. And they'll end up in discouragement and despair. And that's what Bernard was talking about. We've got to give the full truth to God's mercy.
Dr. Edward Sri is our guest this hour. Who Am I to Judge? Responding to Relativism with Logic and Love. If you have questions or comments for Dr. Sri, 888-318-7884. We'll get to more of the seven keys for responding to relativism when we come back. And we'll get to your calls for Dr. Sri. We'll be right back on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Bishop James Conley of the Diocese of Lincoln. Keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
It may be true for you, but not for me. How often have you heard this during a discussion with friends or family? Whether talking about faith, morality, politics, or just the basic notion of truth, so many people are captive to the notion of relativism, the belief that reality is something we decide. In his new audio presentation, Your Truth, My Truth, apologist Carlo Broussard breaks down this intellectual cancer, looking at the different kinds of relativism we regularly encounter and demonstrating how, ultimately, they collapse under the weight of their own incoherence. More importantly, Carlo makes a powerful case for the existence of objective truth, showing you how to explain to others that right and wrong are both real and universal, because it was designed that way by God. Order your copy of Your Truth, My Truth by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Luke 11:29, Jesus said to the people as they gathered before him, "This generation is an evil generation. It seeks a sign, but no sign will be given it, except the sign of Jonah. As Jonah was assigned to the Ninevites, so will the Son of Man be to this generation. Well, Jonah went through the streets shouting, 40 days more and Nineveh will be overthrown. The king proclaimed a fast, and all the people and animals fasted with sackcloth and ashes, and God had mercy on them. What is the sign for our generation? Could it be the same sign? Lent is roughly 40 days, and certainly a generation that kills so many of its young that it is just conceived is evil enough. Penance and prayer, self-denial and true contrition, such must be our response. Nothing else will do." I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Seven Keys for Responding to Relativism is part three of Who Am I to Judge, the latest book by Dr. Edward Sree. And the subtitle of the book, Responding to Relativism with Logic and Love, and we are all swimming in a sea of relativism. It's around us all the time. We know what it is because it's the culture we live in. The first you already dealt with, Dr. Sree, Lead with Mercy. The second, relativism wounds people.
Yeah, this is actually a quote from Pope Francis that he says, you know, relativism is actually wounding people. And I like to make this point that it's not just a bad idea. Relativism is something that's actually ruining people's lives. Why? You know, so what we do is, if I buy into relativism, which our culture has, we believe that there is no real moral truth, then, you know, what we do is we don't give people a compass for their lives. It's just go out and do whatever you want, be whoever you want to be. I remember as a kid growing up, you probably had the same thing. Do you ever hear people tell you, hey, just be your own person?
Yes.
You know?
Right.
You know, just be yourself. And I remember as a kid going, well, who else am I going to be? You know, I think we don't give people any guidance for life. And then what happens is if we tell people they can just do whatever they want, then they're going to, many people are going to end up doing selfish things that will hurt other people. You know, really what we're made for is human persons. We're made for love. We're made to give love. We're made to be loved. And a traditional kind of Catholic way of looking at life, or even a pre-Christian classical way of looking at life in Athens, for example, great philosophers like Plato and Aristotle, you know, they saw life was about friendship. It was about loving the people that were in your life. And Jesus would say amen to that, and he would highlight that the greatest friendship is friendship with God. That's what we would add on as Christians. And so if that's what life is all about, that's where we're going to find our happiness, is in our relationship with God and with our family and our friends. Then, you know, if we start living in relativism and just say there is no purpose, just do what you want, what's going to suffer the most? If we just say that there is no purpose to life, there is no goal in life, everyone just does whatever our Lord wants, it's not surprising that our relationships will suffer the most. And that's what's happening. And when I taught college students at Benedictine College for many years, this is like for the big revolution, Benedictine, you know, when you know, most of the people in my class were not there for the Catholic thing. They were just forced to be in a class to fulfill some requirement. Today, it's a great Catholic school. But back then, 90% of the people didn't want to be there. And I knew I had to win them over on the Catholic moral tradition. And they're all coming from a relativistic perspective. How do I do that? Well, I knew that if I could talk about relationships, talk about friendships, that was going to speak to their hearts. Because they knew, yeah, my parents, you know, they got divorced and they didn't really think about me in that process. Relativism yep. supports all that, right? Hey, do whatever you want. If you want to get divorced, hey, that's great. You don't right. have to think about that. Just think about you. You know, or they were in dating relationships where they felt used by the other person or let down by the other person. Relativism, do whatever you want. Hey, it's great. You're free to do whatever you want. But I knew that you can pierce through the webs of relativism and get to their hearts and go, oh, yeah, and make connections. If we promote relativism, then you're going to promote more and more hurt in our relationships.
Dr. Edward Sree is our guest on Catholic Answers Live today. We'll go now to calls. Mark in Bradenton, Florida, listening on EWTN. Mark, you are on with Dr. Edward Sree. What's your question?
And my question is in regards to Pope Francis Amoris Laetitia and what appears to be his opinion opposing relativism, but there seems to be, in my opinion, help me understand, a major contradiction in how Pope Francis seems to be suggesting that we at the laity and the priest deal with Catholics who are divorced and remarried civilly. And I wanted to ask first, and I have a follow-up, do you think there is actually an oxymoron present within Pope Francis' encyclical in regards to relativism as it relates to traditional marriage definition from the Gospels, if you will, Matthew 19?
Dr. Sri?
I don't think that there, I would say oxymoron sounds strong. I would say there's a lot of subtleties. It's a complex document, and it's a complex issue. It's a messy issue. I mean, marriages that are people going through divorce, and then they remarry, but they want to be right with the church. All these things are very, very messy. So it's not surprising that you find in the document different angles, different, you know, subtleties there. There's a lot of debate about the document, too. I want to really recommend, I know Catholic Answers has some great things on this. You should check out their website. That's where I would go to, you know, really encourage you to read up on that. But in terms of relativism, I would say Pope Francis is actually very strong on this point. And when it comes to marriage, he's super strong on, you know, the divorce culture and, you know, all these ideological movements that are undermining marriage. What I always tell people is I think we have to see Pope Francis is just wanting to do all he can to reach out to people in these complex situations. Can the church just do a little bit more? What can we more possibly do to bring these people back into the fold? And that's a great intention. We have to just applaud that. And you know, how we practically do that is, you know, he's trying to, you know, look at different avenues there. And there's a lot of vagueness in the document. I read something from Archbishop Chaput. He just wrote something in recent months about that as well. But in general, the intention is to go out and reach out to the lost, you know, that are and bring them back. I think that we just have to always remember that. But always remember the church's teachings on marriage. They come from Jesus. They're not going to change. Those are always there. How we practically reach out to them, there's people going to be debating about that moving forward.
And Mark, you said you had a follow-up question?
Yes, and I thank you, and I really appreciate and personally would associate myself with your remarks of the complication. But let me ask you, in your opinion, a practical reality based on the analogy you used earlier about being advised as a young person to be yourself or, you know, do what you think is right. What do you think about, like in a parish, say you have a divorced person who is civilly remarried that is actually teaching in the catechism program? I mean, what do you do? Do you allow that, or do you speak up? Is that something that we consider to be right, if you will, within the construct of the Roman Catholic Church and the teachings of Jesus and the Gospels?
Wow. Yeah, that talk about complex there. I'm just going to shoot from the hip a couple of things. First of all, let me ask you, is this someone you know? Is this someone you have a personal relationship with?
Well, there are several, and yes, I do. And also, anecdotally, the point is that these types of complications are more and more common today than they were when I was going to Catholic schools and even going to Catholic universities, where we're told when you even see these types of relationships, whether it be a civilly remarried divorcee teaching catechism or an openly active gay priest speaking what seems to be anathema. What do you do? Just look the other way and be yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, I'll give you, here's a general principle. This is something, you know, I don't know how you're familiar with FOCUS, the Fellowship of Catholic University Students. We talk about this a lot when we're raising up our student leaders and the young adults that help us on this missionary work on college campuses. You know, we welcome everyone to participate in what we're doing. I don't care what color you are, what race you are, what religion you are, what your beliefs are, what your moral life is for. We're called to go out and be open and evangelize everybody and share the love of Christ with them. Now, when it comes to a student, say, on a college campus that's thinking, I'd like to lead a study. I want to be a leader in this movement. I want to be, you know, a Bible study leader. That's where we say, hey, you know, everyone has a potential for that. But if someone's going to actually be in a leadership role where they're standing up and representing the Catholic Church, what's absolutely crucial is that they have the moral authority to do that. And I would say it doesn't matter how smart someone is, how much they could have memorized the Bible and the catechism, but if they're not interiorly living in harmony with Christ, you know, on a significant issue, we're all struggling and we all have our own sins and all. But when I am not in harmony with it in my moral life, I don't have the moral authority to stand up and do that. For example, let me just give an example. Let's say if I were having an affair, I'm not, but let's just say I were having an affair and I were to go speak at a marriage conference. And even if nobody knew about it, I'm not going to be an effective instrument of the gospel. I might speak all this truth, and maybe there'd be some people that would benefit from that. But the impact that God would want to have through that presentation is going to be greatly diminished just because my life is not fully yielded to that. And you can say the same thing about whether it's a college student that's sleeping around. You know, we challenge the students, hey, you want to be in leadership? Just want you to know, you know, some of the big issues college students struggle with is chastity, and we want to make sure you're living a chaste life because you're going to be standing up and representing Christ. Or you're going to be, let's say, you know, another big issue on college campuses is drunkenness. And, you know, if you struggle with, you know, is it okay to have a beer if you're 21? Absolutely. But are you getting drunk? You know, because that's serious sin, according to church teaching. And so these are issues we challenge the students on because we have to say, you know, if you're going to stand up as a teacher, you're held to an even higher standard, the letter of James points out for us. So I would keep those principles in mind, you know, that I think that for the good of everyone, we want to make sure we're living fully in harmony in the church when you're standing up in official position. That being said, could there be somebody who is just struggling with alcoholism? Maybe they're not going to assume a formal leadership role, you know, at the parish or, you know, in Focus or whatever organization you might have. But that doesn't mean they can't be a witness at all, because maybe they sincerely are trying. They want to live a good life and they really love God, and God looks at them very mercifully and they keep going to confession. You know, and so they can still be evangelists. They're just, but do we want to put them in a formal leadership role? I think that's a different thing. And I would apply that to a whole array of issues, including the ones that you mentioned there. So I hope that general principles are helpful, and then you can apply them to particular situations in a prudential way in your own discernment.
Thanks, Mark. 888-318-7884 is the number. If you have a question for Dr. Edward Sree, we were talking about your seven keys for responding to relativism in your book, Who Am I to Judge? We talked about lead with mercy. We talked about relativism wounds people. The third key is law equals love. What does that mean?
Yeah, in our culture today, people think law is just some random rule from our religion. So why are you imposing your moral laws on us? You know, this is your truth. It's not my truth. But what we have to see is, no, law is all about love. It comes from the God who is love. He loves us so much. He made us a certain way. He made us to be happy. And he loves us so much, he showed us the way to live life well so we can be happy. That's what the moral law is all about. It's not just some hoops we have to go through. And sadly, I think that's what many Catholics think. And I meet a number of even non-Catholics that might think, oh, you have to do the moral law to be a good person, you know, so I can get to heaven. And but really, it's like, as a dad, I have to give laws in my home because I love my kids and I want them to grow and thrive and be happy. That's what the moral law is all about. So the point I make is that in all of our conversations with our friends, what we want to do is, whatever the issue might be, I don't care if the issue is abortion or the definition of marriage or premarital sex or whatever the issue is, bring it back to love as quickly as possible. In other words, frame it all in the context of love. If we just stay at the level of just, you know, kind of some heady argument, it's not going to connect to people's lives. We have to show them, no, they're going to be happier if they live this out. And it's a loving thing to do, to share the moral law with others.
888-318-7884 is the number. Who Am I to Judge? Responding to Relativism with Logic and Love is the latest book from Dr. Edward Sree. We're working our way through part three, the seven keys for responding to relativism. If you have questions about relativism, if you have a comment about relativism or any part of the moral life, we are happy to take those as soon as we come back from this break. I am your host, Cy Kellett. Again, this is Catholic Answers Live. And, oh, I should mention, next hour, we're going to be talking about street evangelization. I think that's a touchy one for a lot of folks. So if you have questions about street evangelization, wonder, should I get involved in that? Is it appropriate for a Catholic? We're going to have that coming up next hour. This hour, Who Am I to Judge? Responding to Relativism with Logic and Love. More on that when we come back.
Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here to tell you about my new book, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties. Have you ever read something in the Bible that confused you? Or has a skeptic ever asked you to explain a scandalous passage and you didn't know what to say? Doesn't Genesis contradict science? Why does the Bible promote slavery? How could God order his people to kill women and children? It's happened to just about everyone. But now you have a place to turn for the answers. In Hard Sayings, I look at dozens of the most confounding passages in Scripture and offer clear, reasonable, and Catholic keys to unlocking their true meaning. After reading this book, you'll be equipped to answer the toughest questions skeptics ask about the Bible. So don't be left without an answer again. Order your copy of Hard Sayings today by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
It's been called a crash course in salvation history, the perfect addition to CCD and RCIA reading lists. Catholic Answers' new graphic novel, The Big Picture, has set the Catholic book world on fire with its unique and innovative blend of apologetics and entertainment. With high-quality, full-color illustrations and a storyline that's easy to follow, The Big Picture reveals a story full of passion, suspense, adventure, and hope, engaging the reader immediately. As our heroes come face to face with the drama and mystery of God's plan for the salvation of the world, it gets readers talking and thinking, captivating and entertaining them with eternal truths presented in a non-threatening way. Get your friends and family talking about things that matter. Order your copy of The Big Picture today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Relativism is the kind of the water we're swimming in the, it's the culture we live in. It's all around us. Who Am I to Judge? Responding to Relativism with Logic and Love is Dr. Edward Sree's latest book. 888-318-7884 is our number. Before we get to calls, I'll just remind you that the Catholic Answers Radio Club is a great way to stay connected to Catholic Answers Live, and you get a bunch of insider and cool stuff. Every Friday, we send you out a super groovy weekly email, and we don't share your deets with anyone. Do you know what that means, share your deets? No, but that means share your details. And everyone who signs up gets a free talk from Tim Staples called Evangelization, What Is It and Why You Need It? Go to Catholic.com/Radio Club and sign up. Catholic.com/Radio Club. Dr. Sree, we're going through your 7 points. Before we go to callers, I want to get to one more. So we did the first three, and the first one is to lead with mercy. Second one is relativism wounds people. The third key is law equals love. The fourth key, making judgments versus judging souls. So am I supposed to judge or not judge?
This is the big question out there, right? You always hear people that never quote the Bible. They suddenly quote one verse. They'll say, oh, Jesus said, don't judge. And so why are you Catholics talking about what's morally right or wrong? And what we have to do is see that what Jesus is talking about there is judging a soul, which means you're condemning them. You're saying, I know their spiritual status before God. I know it's never going to change. We're not in that business. Jesus is saying that's between God and that soul alone. But that doesn't mean that I can't make judgments. God wants me to use my mind and make judgments all the time, right? I can look outside and say it's raining, I'm going to get an umbrella. I could see my kid ready to touch the burning stove and realize, oh, that's not good for that person, right? We make judgments all the time. And if I do that, I'm not condemning her soul. I'm not judging her soul, but I'm using my mind and realizing she's going to do something that's going to hurt her. And can we do the same thing when it comes to people's moral actions? Absolutely. Jesus wants us to do this. In fact, the New Testament says, Paul talks about the spiritual man judges all things. So we're supposed to judge, absolutely, judge actions, judge moral actions. We don't judge souls. Let me give an example. If there's a college student, this is an example I use in the book, let's say at UCLA there in California, the young freshman girl who's sleeping around one man after another, can I use my mind to make a judgment that's not good for her, that she's never going to find the love that she's looking for, that this is not a good act? Absolutely. Now, I don't judge her soul. I don't know her background. I don't know her situation. I mean, God sees more than I can see. Maybe this poor girl was sexually abused. Maybe she came from a broken home. Maybe she was just always taught from a young age, this is what it means to be a liberated woman. I don't know all that. That's between her and God alone. But if I love her, here's the key. If I love her, I may not judge her soul, but I know this isn't good for her. I need to share the truth with her. Again, if she's a close friend or family member, you know, someone in my life, I need to charitably, kindly, maybe not right away, but in the right time, the right way, lead her to what is going to lead her to her happiness. That's what love is. If I love her, I want to share a better way for her. I don't judge her soul, but I can make a judgment. This isn't good for her, and I want to help her. That's love.
Dr. Edward Shree, our guest today, Elias in El Monte, California, listening on Immaculate Heart Radio. You are on with Dr. Shree. What's your question?
Well, first I wanted to say, reading your book that you co-wrote with Curtis Martin, The Real Story, I just want to say, I'm not done with it yet, but I want to say it's really, really good, and I appreciate that. Also, I had a question. As far as the title of your book that you're speaking about, Who Am I to Judge? Obviously, our Holy Father has been a reference about that for a long time, and I think unfairly taken out of context. Was the title of your book in a way to kind of maybe in a way bring attention to that, or is it completely unrelated?
No, I would say I love the title because it gets right to the heart of the matter of morality, right? Can I make a judgment? Just like we were just discussing here. And now, am I happy that, you know, I can kind of, you know, take, you know, I don't know if your experience is, but I find the media often doesn't get Pope Francis right. and they really took what he said really out of context in a really bad way. And I want to take that statement back and make that distinction that we just talked about, that, yes, we are not supposed to make judgments about people's souls, as Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount. But we should always be able to make judgments about what is right and wrong. And we need to have confidence in moral truth and confidence that we can talk about moral truth without being a mean, judgmental, intolerant person. I can make a judgment about moral action. This is right. This is wrong. One should never do this without having to judge a person's soul. And if I disagree with your lifestyle, I disagree with the choices you're making, I could still respect you. We might even be able to still be friends. But I disagree doesn't mean I hate you. And please don't force me into this box that is saying, oh, just because I have a certain conviction that I'm a judgmental person. And we need to push back on that. And that's, I think, Pope Francis, Pope Benedict especially, was really calling us to do, is to push back on that relativism that's trying to make us like all cower and never say what is right or wrong anymore.
Thanks, Elias. We go to Amy now in Radford, Virginia, watching us on Facebook Live. Thanks for watching on Facebook Live, Amy. You are on with Dr. Edward Shree.
Hey, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my question. It's actually a two-part question. So from what I'm understanding is that this book has 7 tips to respond to relativism. However, with the two part, is that with these 7 tips, is it possible for people who may be struggling with some things in their own life, could they apply these 7 tips to their own life? And the second part is, should they apply it to their own life before they use it in someone else's life with your book?
Oh, great. I think, you know, in our culture, a lot of people, a lot of good people have struggled with relativism. I meet people that are working in parishes. I meet even people that go to daily mass that sometimes are afraid. I'm afraid to actually say this is definitively right or wrong. My brother's living a homosexual lifestyle, and I'm afraid to say it's right or wrong. And so there's a bit of that relativism that's kind of creeped in. These are good people. They believe in God. They believe in the church and all. But because of the pressures of our culture, they start to waffle a little bit. They start qualifying some of their moral statements. Well, for me, marriage is between a man and woman, but for other people, you know, and I think the book is meant to, first and foremost, it's meant to equip people to talk about relativism with their friends, you know, talk about moral truth. But I can tell you, I've had people who have had some of that relativism in them. There was a guy I just met this January who told me, you know, after hearing a presentation I gave where I walked through these 7 keys and all, he said, I never realized how much relativism had taken shape in my own heart and mind. and I didn't realize the problem it was causing. And you've helped me to see there really is moral truth. And I want to be better at standing up for that, and first in my own life and then sharing it with others. And I've met other people, as I just shared that one example, where it is having that kind of impact. It is doing something in their own hearts, getting them to conform more moral truth in their own lives.
Amy?
Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Very good.
All right. Hope it's helpful, Amy. Thanks.
This one I really like, I have to say. This one I think is really hard for people to get. But your fifth key to responding to relativism is this. Relativism is not neutral.
Yeah, this one, you know, is really important, because relativism presents itself as we're the neutral position. We just don't know what's right or wrong or what truth is. And so we're very humble. We get along with everybody. We're very tolerant and very accepting. So they present themselves as like the moral Switzerland, I like to say.
Right.
That's not true. You know, it's not true. Relativism is a certain philosophy of life. It's a way of looking at the world. It's a certain perspective. And what's happening is the relativistic culture is trying to impose its perspective on life on us and make us have to play by their rules. And so I think we just have to kind of resist that. You know, and you see this all the time when people are pressuring in our culture, you know, to just get us to conform. I meet so many people, especially the younger generation, college students, people in their 20s and 30s, young professionals. They are so scared to say anything's right or wrong because they know they'll be beat up for it. And so they start making compromises and they start doing this whole for me morality. Well, for me, this is right. But for other people, if they want to do something else. And that's just the culture. It is not a neutral position. They are aggressively trying to silence Christian witness to truth. So what do we do about that? Here's the practical. I love to give this example is, you know, the next time you're with your friend, you're out at a bar or you're out for coffee or it's Thanksgiving dinner and your relative says something like, you know, why is the Catholic Church so intolerant? Or who are you to judge? You know, just come right back and say this. Say, excuse me, are you judging me? I love, you know, that whole idea of the Christian playing the don't judge card. Most of our secular friends are ready to do that. But the reason I say that, it's not just funny. It actually, it gets to the foundational issue here. And just come right back and say, you know, I feel like you think I'm a mean, judgmental person just because I think something's wrong or I think something's right. And then they'll say, oh, well, but you shouldn't tell other people what to do. And that's when you got them. Just come right back to them and say, wait, hold on, my friend. You know, you may believe that there's no moral truth. You might believe in relativism, and you're a free person. You're free to believe that. It doesn't make any sense to me, that perspective, but you're free to believe that. But whatever you do, my dear friend, please do not impose your belief in moral relativism on me. Do not impose your faith that there's no moral structure to the universe on me. You haven't convinced me of that. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't have to be conformed to your own ideas. Just come right back. And what that does is it all sort of levels the playing field. You can actually start to have real conversation about real issues. You can go back and say, I'm willing to hear what you think about relativism. If you want to talk about that, tell me, why do you really believe there's moral truth? There's no moral truth. You really believe genocide is okay if somebody says, well, for me, it's okay to get rid of this race? Or if for a rapist, they want to say, for me, rape is okay. Would you really go that far? If you just start asking them questions and they have to defend relativism, that's a great thing, because once they start talking, they realize they're on thin ice. And so and then they might be more open to hearing another way of looking at life.
This hour, we're working our way through the seven keys for responding to relativism with Dr. Edward Sree, our guest today on Catholic Answers Live. I am your host, Cy Kellett. We'll take a quick break and get the last two keys and see if we can get some more calls in as well. We'll be right back.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Howdy, folks. This is Jimmy Akin, and I have exciting news. Starting this spring, Catholic Answers will begin airing its first ever television program. It'll be appearing on EWTN, and you'll also be able to watch it, no matter where you are, from Catholic.com using your smart TV, tablet, or other device. Catholic Answers' mission is to use every means we can to reach people with the message of Christ and His Church. But until now, television has been beyond our reach. That's about to change, and that's why we need your help right now. Producing a quality, professional television show like this is not cheap, and it can only happen with the generous support of donors like you. To make your donation, visit Catholic.com and click the Catholic Answers television banner, or call us toll-free at 888-291-8000. That's the Catholic Answers television banner at Catholic.com, or call toll-free 888-291-8000.
Do you want to end abortion, halt the attack on traditional marriage, and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
If you want to study maybe in a group, the Who Am I to Judge? Responding to Relativism with Logic and Love by Dr. Edward Sree, you can get the DVD set for a group to study. Maybe would this, Dr. Sree, would it be appropriate for, say, a young adult group or a youth group to go through?
Absolutely. I know a number of high schools are using it. I know a number of families using it in their home. But certainly a lot of parishes as well are using it just to give that kind of adult faith formation. All these parishes have great programs on Bible study and sacramental prep, but on this critical issue of giving people a Catholic moral worldview, there's just not much out there. So we're delighted to have the video program available.
Part three of the book, Who Am I to Judge, is Seven Keys for Responding to Relativism. We've gone through five of them. Let's get to the last two before we go back to calls till the top of the hour. Relativism is a mask is key number six.
Yeah, this is a big one here. Many times we're talking about an issue with a friend. It could be, again, whatever, some hot button issue in the culture. And we're really intent on talking about that issue. But we have to realize there's many issues and maybe in their own hearts that they're struggling with. And relativism is often a mask kind of covering up their own challenges. So one example would be, if somebody is struggling with a certain sin, then relativism could be a very convenient way to justify what they're doing, to say, well, there's no moral truth, so it's okay. I don't have to change. I tell the story in a book about a young man I met who was very adamant promoting relativism. And we had a big debate about it at a conference. And then later on in the conference, he came up to me and admitted, he goes, I really appreciate our conversations. You give me a lot to think about. And I realize I'm not really a relativist at heart. I've just been wanting to say I'm a relativist because I want to be able to say premarital sex is okay. I want to be able to say premarital sex is okay for me. And what an honest, humble man to come back and admit that to me. But I think we just have to realize, not in every case, but in a lot of cases, relativism's espoused by people because it allows them to justify, rationalize their own little sin problem.
Yeah.
Look, we do these things all the time, right? You can make a commitment for Lent. I'm going to get up right when I say I'm going to get up. I'm not going to hit the snooze button. And it's Friday of first week of Advent or first week of Lent. And the baby was up all night, so I'll just, you'll just come up with some rational thing to justify what you're doing. We do this all the time, but people do it on bigger sin issues. And that's why we need to pray and fast for the people that we're trying to evangelize. It's not just an intellectual debate. There's a lot of spiritual warfare going on. Let's be patient with them. Let's also pray for them. Let's make sacrifices for them so that they can overcome that hurdle in their own life and embrace truth.
And number seven is even dramatically different from the other ones. The number seven key is taking on the heart of Christ.
Yeah. So this one here is simply, Jesus went out with great love to people that he disagreed with. With people that he knew had bad ideas and were living immoral lives. We need to imitate that as well. If Jesus hung out with the sinners, the tax collectors, the Pharisees, all these people that were opposed, you know, to the gospel way of living life. But he brought about change and brought about conversion by being with them. He didn't come with to them looking at them as an enemy, as someone that, you know, had to be, you know, defeated. You know, he looked at it as a friend that he wanted to win over. And I think it's that attitude of compassion with people that we disagree with that really should underlie all of our conversations. If people sense in us that we legitimately love them, that we sincerely care about them, and even if they persist in their falsehood or persist in their immoral behavior, that we're still going to love them. If they sense that with us, then they encounter something that, you know, they're going to be more open to hearing what we actually have to say about truth.
Let's go back to calls. Anonymous in Alberta, Canada, listening on EWTN. Anonymous, you are on with Dr. Edward Sree.
Thank you, Dr. Sree. I actually have a pretty simple question, and you kind of answered it slightly to the last few callers, but nothing right on the nail on the head. Pardon me, the nail on the head. So my question is, I haven't been able to find a really powerful information to the question, well, as long as I'm not hurting anyone, it's none of your business how I live my life. Like you'd given answers as far as, you know, coming back with things like the Nazi example and, you know, that kind of thing, and don't push your moral relativism on me. But if I'm bringing it up to them, say, like you had used the example of the gay brother-in-law or whatever, but if I'm bringing it up, and they say, well, it's not hurting anyone. As long as it's not hurting anyone, it has nothing to do with, you know, the Auschwitz camps and all that kind of stuff. I'm not hurting anyone. What business is of you to tell me how to live my life?
You know, Anonymous, Dr. Sree and I are both kind of chuckling while you're asking the question, because chapter 3 of the book, Who Am I to Judge, is titled, But I'm Not Hurting Anyone. Dr. Sree.
So I'm going to refer you to that chapter because that'll get you much more than I can give you in a short interview here. But I'll just briefly say, I think it's important for us to realize that there's different ways we hurt people. There are some ways where I hurt people directly. Like I go up to you and I slap you in the face. That's a direct offense, right? But there are many times where we hurt other people by failing to be the best that we can be. You know, it reminds me of that, you know, that prayer we say at the beginning of Mass, the I confess prayer. I confess, you know, all my sins and my thoughts, in my words and what I've done, but also what I failed to do. And so by my failure to be the best I can be, did my failure to be as much light in this world as I can be and to love as well as I can be, that's actually going to have an impact on other people. So let me give a couple examples. If, for example, as a father, I don't beat my kids, I don't steal from them, I never murder them, I don't lie to them, but I'm just not around, I'm just busy with my career and I'm not present to them, am I hurting them? Absolutely. I've left a deep scar in their lives by my failure to be the best dad I can be to them. Let me give another example. If I'm a married man and I'm addicted to porn, I'm not hurting anybody. Am I, you know, I'm just looking at pictures on my phone or on the internet. Or, you know, I'm not hurting anyone. That's what many people would say. But what am I doing there? I'm actually doing something in my character. It's forging something in me. It's making me look at the opposite sex as an object. It's training my sexual desires in a way that's supposed to be meant to lead toward authentic love and self-giving. But I'm starting to look at other people, other women, other people in my life more as objects that satisfy my sexual desire. And that's going to affect my marriage. It's going to affect, even if I'm a single person, my future marriage. It's going to affect my relationships with the opposite sex. So it does end up hurting other people because I'm not able to freely love them the way I'm supposed to. And use the example of, you know, someone that's, you know, hey, you know, we're in this gay marriage relationship and we're not hurting anyone. Well, that's a more complicated issue, and we don't have all time for that. I'm going to refer you again to the Catholic Answers website and great organizations like Courage that would explain this, you know, more thoroughly. But in a nutshell, that kind of relationship sexually, we're not using our sexuality in a way that God intended. He intended it to be used for love. It's meant to be a total gift of myself, even expressed physically. That's going to be total, and it's so total that it's fruitful. It bears forth into potential new life. Whereas homosexual sexual acts are actually oriented to pleasure. I get pleasure, and maybe I give the other person pleasure. That's it. It is not open toward orienting toward potential new life. And this is why that's so important. Because in my marriage, you know, we're truly open to life together. We're not contracepting. That will draw my wife and I closer together, this sexual act, by being open to. I'm saying, I accept everything about you, my dear wife. I accept even the possibility of becoming a parent with you. And so that our love is not going to be just going side to side, looking at each other face to face, but we're going to look outward for the potential of becoming parents together and serving a good outside of ourselves, serving something bigger than ourselves, bigger than the pleasure I get from this moment. And homosexual acts end up developing a habit of it's not saying that there's not any element of love there, but it's orienting love that not in a way that's going to lead toward the fullness of love that's total and free and faithful, but most of all, fruitful.
Thank you very much, Anonymous. We'll try to work through as many calls as we can now here before we get to the top of the hour. So we'll go to Rita in Dittmer, Missouri, listening on 1460 AM. Rita, you are on with Dr. Edward Sree.
Hello, doctor. You know, my husband and I have prayed at the abortion mill. There's one last surgical abortion mill in Missouri. It's at Forest Park and Boyle in St. Louis. And we've prayed there for many years. And one of the best things that I've ever seen, Abraham Lincoln, he has a quote where he quoted, he said, "No law gives us the right to do what is wrong." And I think since it has been legalized all these so many years now, and 60 million babies dead since the beginning of that legalization, I think a lot of people have talked themselves into this being perfectly fine. To look in their faces, whether it's somebody going in to have their grandchild killed and they're bringing their daughter in to kill the grandchild, or whether it's a husband or a boyfriend, whether it's a worker, I find it hard not to simply, at least at the very least, say God loves you. You know, you don't have to do this today.
So, Rita, real quick, the question then, could you formulate it as a question for Dr. Sree so we'll get an answer in?
My question is, what would you say? What would you say to these people, whether it's a worker, whether it's a girl going in to have her baby killed? What would you say to these people? And again, this is all about relativism, right? The people have talked themselves into this.
Okay, let's let Dr. Sree take a shot.
Okay, great. Yeah, and, you know, in my last chapter of the book, I actually talk about the chapter, "What is Truth?" You know, that was the question Pilate asked. And that's not just an abstract philosophical question. It's something that leads to serious problems. Like, because Pilate didn't believe in truth, what happened? He did what was just most convenient for him that day. He wanted to save his job. He didn't want to have this big riot on his hands as they're all shouting, "Crucify him." So he sent Jesus off to be killed. An innocent person was killed because of moral relativism that day. And that's what's happening in our culture. And I think in the end, we've got to see, when we deny that there's a real truth outside of ourselves, and I can just make up my own truth, then I can do what Pilate did. I can send an innocent person that's inconvenient for me. Yeah, I know this guy's innocent. He probably shouldn't die, but it's better for me. And we end up asserting our own will over other people. John Paul II said that's what we do in abortion. The most innocent life that needs us the most, we view as an inconvenience, and we assert our will over them. Let's proclaim truth so we can proclaim life.
Amen, brother. Dr. Edward Sree, thank you so much for being with us today on Catholic Answers Live.
Thanks for having me. It's great to do it.
Who Am I to Judge? Responding to Relativism with Logic and Love is Dr. Sree's book. Pick it up at a bookstore near you. And next hour, we have, our guest will talk about street evangelization. So if you have a question about street evangelization, if you've thought about it yourself, if maybe you're not sure what the role of Catholics is in evangelizing on the street, we'll be happy to take those calls. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live. We'll be right back after this.